90.7 FM Los Angeles.
Bottom line, I'm gonna make it home.
Don't let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. And if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power.
Caribou, welcome all to Freedom Now, a global Pan-Africanist, internationalist, global affairs program where the survivors of the fittest are now the revival of the fittest, challenging continuously Western propaganda media lies read in order to propel liberation for all. This is Sister Femi. Stay tuned for a radical awakening through a revolutionary music mix flow. And as always, we stand ready for revolution. Freedom now, now freedom. Forward.
Life's not a game. You're not Corey or Jane. Life and a game, no team sport that you should play.
No way.
Life and a game, not a trophy that you should claim. Life and a game, with a dark cause you're playing to pain. Life and a game.
Talofa, which means greetings in the Samoan language. This is Sister Thade with Freedom Now's agenda for the week of Black August 22nd, 2020. We want our listeners to know that this week, on August 25th, marks 5 years since our beloved Didon Kamathi's transition to the ancestor world, where we here at Freedom Now stand on the shoulders of our ancestors and continue marching forward. As Didon's love for humanity, revolution, and surfing were constants in his life and educating the masses, we ask that our listeners honor Didon in the best way you know how, whether it's educating yourself further about liberation, self-determination, doing a meditation for your own health and balance, making art, educating others, whatever it may be, but that we show our solidarity in building ourselves and the masses so we can continue to organize and fight the oppressions of imperialism, colonialism, and capitalism. We commence today's program with our sister, Luyanda Kuboka, and the African Drumbeat Historical Calendar. Then, Black August Los Angeles organizer, Brother G2 Siddiqui, discusses events, political prisoners, and legislation in progress for liberation in our Black August segment. Then, Brother Billion with Black Action 365 and African Town Coalition, in his boots on the ground, updates us on what's been going on in the Los Angeles community. Then, our weekly updates for what's going down in the United Snakes' homeless capital, Skid Row, with our regular correspondent, community activist, and chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, our brother General Jeff. We close out with our co-producer, prolific author, radical historian, and professor of African American Studies at the University of Houston, Dr. Gerald Horn, with his political analysis for the week on what's going on in the nation. Our music clip mix includes MLK, Zap Mama, Pupa Curly, Killer Priest, Zemba Nation, Ross Cass, DJ Premier, and as Freedom Now continues to highlight Los Angeles jazz musicians, this week we honor Jefferson High School alumni violinist Ginger Smock with the Vivian Gary and her all-girl band. So sit back, tell a friend, and as always, we stand ready for revolution.
Every day our brothers suffer and die. The tears down their eyes, we wonder why. Seven diamond mines are
this is Sister Luyanda Kaboka with Freedom Now's African Drumbeat Historical Calendar for this Tuesday, August 22nd, designed to provide you with our story of struggle for a global society based on democratic redistribution of economic power and justice. August 22nd, 1791. The Haitian Revolution begins, leading to the emancipation of the Africans of Haiti and the first black republic in the Western Hemisphere. August 22nd, 1843. Henry Highland Garnett, a Back to Africa leader, calls for a general slave strike and the violent overthrow of slavery and the slavetocracy of the United States government. August 23rd, 1976. Over 200,000 African workers go on a national strike in solidarity with the student youth-led Soweto uprising, increasing the militant resistance to European settler colonialism in South Africa. August 24th, 1831. Under the leadership of Nat Turner, huge slave revolts break out in Virginia, adding to the European capitalist class drive towards the elimination of slavery as a too dangerous mode of production for their survival. August 25th, 1978. The Front for the Liberation of Nicaragua, the FSLN, seizes the National Palace and overthrows the brutal U.S.-installed Somoza dictatorship, thereby bringing into power the popular organized masses herald a people's popular revolution. August 25th, 1640. Linga, an African sister warrior, clad in animal skins and carrying an axe, bow and arrows, and a sword, led the Congo people to defeat the Portuguese invaders. With one swing, she cut off the heads of the colonizers. In 1580, Portuguese historians reported of an African confederacy in Monomotapa that had armies of women. August 26, 1966. Namibia Day is celebrated. Namibia, formerly Southwest Africa, a German colony, moves from peaceful protest and petition for freedom to armed struggle under the leadership of Sam Jumo, signifying the bankruptcy of appealing to the consciousness of the Nazi colonial masters. August 26, 1733. Nanny, legendary chief sorceress and woman leader of the Jamaican Windward Maroon rebels, whose successful assaults against the British slavetocracy gave her mythical adoration among the African masses. She was the sister of Cujo, a Maroon leader whose daring military actions made her the most distinguished of all Maroon leaders. August 27th, 1963. Dr. King leads the famous March on Washington for jobs, peace, and freedom. August 27th, 1963. Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, famed Pan-Africanist, dies in Ghana. Dr. Du Bois, without a doubt, the greatest African scholar of the United States, originally assumed the crisis of racism was one of ignorance, but after authoring over 30 books, hundreds of papers, and involvement with most of the major social change movements of the 20th century, concluded that without the elimination of capitalism and imperialism, people of color would forever be oppressed by the United States and Western Europe. August 28, 1918. Big Bill Haywood and 14 other members of the International Workers of the World, the Wobblies, are sentenced to 20 years in prison for refusal to be drafted and for organizing the working class in the U.S. to stop the capitalist war by the working class non-participation. August 29, 1824. Nanyihi, the last beloved clan mother of the Cherokee people before their removal from their ancestral homelands. She was a matriarchal decision maker for her people before the Europeans. She led her people in successful commercial cattle raising and other enterprises, which were so successful that Europeans targeted their business for appropriation. August 29, 1970, the National Chicano Moratorium demonstrations against the war in Vietnam becomes a rebellion when the police attack a peaceful crowd of tens of thousands of activists, heralds a new stage in the Chicano struggle. The 36th annual Chicano Moratorium will be announced later in this program. This has been Sister Luyanda with the African Drumbeat Historical Calendar for Freedom Now, 90.7 FM in Southern California, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide at www.kpfk.org. And in the language of struggle of South Africa, Azania, please join us wherever you are. Amandla!
Awethu!
Amandla!
Awethu!
Amandla!
Awethu!
I never witnessed such things as beautiful as unusual. Like a May, Black August, and that's a poet. It's so gorgeous, it's so beautiful, unusual.
This is Sister Thade with Freedom Now, here with our brother G2 Siddiqui, an organizer with Black August Los Angeles. Welcome back to Freedom Now.
Thank you for having me on, Tess. I'm honored to be a guest on Freedom Now. I know this is we're right in the middle of, almost in the middle of acknowledging the life and the passing of Brother Dion, and it's an emotional time during BA for me.
We uplift our Dion Kamathi, who also organized with Black August, and we honor you too, Brother G2, for continuing to organize and educate the masses with programs and events every August. And so, Brother G2, for our Black August segment on Freedom Now, what is happening this week?
Well, right now we are entering into second to last program, the 21st, which is one of the days referred to as a free day, acknowledging the contributions and the death of Comrade George Jackson, which happened August 21st, 1971. And there's a possibility that we may do a virtual martyrs tour, which is something that we've done over the past 7-8 years in the community. So that'll be a challenge, and also something that will be rewarding, because our audience won't be limited to just those in Los Angeles area. So that may happen before the end of, there's no actual date for it, but that may happen before the end of August.
We just wanted our listeners to know that this is a pre-recorded interview, but you can still follow up with the event on the 21st. It will be recorded. And so, Brother G2, can you expand on the Martyrs Tour?
The Martyrs Tour is areas of conflict between the Black Panther Party and law enforcement. And so we go to these locations where there were actually members that were actually murdered by LAPD. One of the locations we go to is the home where the committee used to meet for the Solidarity 3. they used to meet there to strategize around the Solidarity 3 case, and Solidarity 3 were the three brothers, George Jackson, Fleetwood Drumgoole, and John Crochet, who were accused of murdering a guard in Solidarity prison in 1970, responding to the murder of three brothers on the O'Wing Yard. O'Wing is the solitary confinement yard where W.L. Nolan, Alvin Miller, and Cleveland Evan were shot and murdered. And there was no one was held accountable for it. The grand jury that was impaneled found that the killings were in policy. So we go by that location. We also go by 41st and Central, where the shootout between the newly formed SWAT team and members of the Black Panther Party were, and they were successful, the Black Panther members were successful in preventing the SWAT team from murdering any of their comrades in various locations throughout L.A. and Compton that we visited. We visited the gravesite of Bunchy Carter, who was a founder of the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party.
Brother G2, since May, the world has been protesting police murders of Africans worldwide, and particularly here in the United States, as killer cops are given paid leave or not prosecuted at all and not being held accountable under any circumstances. There are defund the police campaigns and upcoming elections for Los Angeles District Attorney, where a lot of the pushback on Jackie Lacey is based on the issue of her not prosecuting murderous cops and funneling other Black community members into the prisons instead. And so we want to ask, does Black August support any of this part of the politicians, or just work in the basis of the larger political framework for change?
Black August is primarily focused on, even though individually, we may have individuals may take position as far as the DA is concerned. Our primary push is to address legislation that continues to incarcerate people of color and address those issues. You know, we have a lot of comrades who have been warehoused within the belly of the beast for decades beyond their period of recognized confinement because of their political views. So we're constantly challenging that on a local level with various laws. But in terms of supporting any particular politician, that's not within our purview, although we address various laws, and we're trying to, that's written into policy, and we're trying to challenge those particular laws that keep people continuously confined.
Can you talk about Black August solidarity with political prisoners?
We in California, we're unique in the sense that a lot of the political prisoners within the prison system are those that develop their awareness and their political understanding while incarcerated. And as a result of that, they have been continuously confined, and they're really kind of they're invisible. You know about certain people like Romaine Chip Fitzgerald or Rochelle McGee, but there are dozens of political prisoners that you don't know about. And one of the things that we're doing is highlighting them during our political prisoner piece, which we normally do on the 21st of August. So tomorrow, you tune in to Facebook Live or YouTube Live on the Black August Los Angeles channel. You'll be able to hear about these individuals that have been warehoused for 40 plus years. What their plight is. So, you know, we identify more than just those individuals that are identified as political prisoners, such as Tula Shakur, Mumia. So hopefully people will be able to tune into that and get more information about these other political prisoners.
And so as this is a pre-recorded program, can you remind our listeners about the link for the 21st program?
Yes, so the program we're doing tomorrow, August 21st, is it'll be Facebook Live and it'll be YouTube Live and it'll be recorded. So if you don't get opportunity to see it, you can go back to either Facebook or YouTube. And if you go to Facebook, you go to Black Office Los Angeles calendar, and you can locate it there, or go to YouTube and the Black Honkers Los Angeles page, and you can access that program.
Brother G2, can you discuss what legislation Black August is pushing for?
There are a couple of bills that we are supporting, unfortunately, because that's not an area that I focus a lot on. I don't know the particular bill numbers. I work with Fair Chance Project, which is one of the organizations that are addressing various bills. And so I would refer people to Fair Chance Project to get more information about it. But there are definitely a couple of bills that are being pushed. One is addressing the LWOP, drop the LWOP. I don't know a particular number on the bill, though. LWOP refers to the acronym that refers to life without, where prisoners are primarily convicted of a crime that falls into that category, which means that they will never, no matter what they do to rehabilitate themselves, they will never get out of prison unless a bill is passed that addresses that, or they petition the governor's office for clemency. There's one of the brothers that is a political prisoner whose name is Jeffrey Azeem Burks, who was convicted of a crime within prison that someone else confessed to, and there was a strong amount of evidence that pointed to his innocence, and he was convicted of it nonetheless and given a LWOP sentence. So here's someone that's factually innocent, but because of what transpired in court, he'll never get out. And he's been incarcerated now for the past 47 years.
And so as we get ready to wrap up here, Brother G2, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Well, I just want to remind your listeners, when we talk about Black August and its origin, people need to be aware of who created it. And a lot of times credit is given to someone else other than those who were responsible for the creation of Black August. And it was the Black August Resistance Collective within the Belly of the Beast that created this yearly practice. Although Black August has taken on life of itself, because when we look through history, we find that there were different moments throughout the history in the U.S. and in other areas, other countries, where that month is significant to conditions and issues that impact people of African descent in the diaspora as well as on the continent.
Thank you so much. Again, we've been speaking with our brother G2 Siddiqui, organizer with Black August Los Angeles.
It's been my honor.
Ball, power to the people. This is Rossi Live, and you're listening to Freedom Now on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and on the web at kpfk.org. Respect the revolutionary messages and music that is being heard right now on Freedom Now. What's the call? Free them all. Right on.
Spotlight Africa speaks to a different African reality.
I think we need to begin to engage as equals rather than begin to engage as if we are Africa is a territory where people from outside have a right to be able to dictate and give a solution.
It's about understanding contemporary Africa, the continent's current affairs, politics, economics, and the significance of Africa globally. I am Assumpta Oturu. Join us every Saturday at noon here on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. That is Spotlight Africa every Saturday at noon here on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
And our countries are colonial structures.
Africa for Africa.
We have back with us Freedom Now producer Brother Billion with Blackshin 365 and Africa Town Coalition.
Thank you, Terrence. It's great to be back. I do appreciate it, especially this mighty month of Black August, the month in which we both received our great master of information, Dedan Kamathi. And as we know, he also made his transition in this month. It's a month of historical revolutionary struggle. Actually, right now, there is a hunger strike going on in the prison, so most definitely want to raise those brothers and sisters up, once again, demanding that they receive more humane treatment inside of the belly of the beast. So it's most definitely an honor to be able to come and share during this month.
Brother Billion, as you are boots on the ground, what community updates do you have for us for what's been going down?
Yeah, there's actually a lot going on. As everyone knows, it's been a long, hot summer. The most recent national and even international uprisings that began the end of May and kind of carried us into June to begin the summer. Right now, we are in the middle of a heat wave out here in Los Angeles, but it has also raised the temperature of the movement work that is going on. This past week, a number of individuals and organizations came together to voice our support and protection for our mighty warrior queen, Dr. Malina Abdullah. Last week, the LAPD claimed they responded to a call that she was being held hostage, her and her children being held hostage inside of her home. And they descended upon her residence. At one point, they had guns drawn and ordered her out of her home. So we found that that was basically a false call. And many of us who are familiar with the work Dr. Abdullah has been doing and the history of repression believe this was a very intentional attack against our mighty sister and the work they are doing, as people all around the world right now are demanding that police are defunded. You know, the call for defund the police is taking serious effect. We're even seeing in certain areas like Minneapolis, they are disbanding police departments. So we know our sister is having a mighty effect on world affairs. They are claiming Black Lives Matter is the largest movement in human history. So we most definitely salute them. But we came together with the Nation of Islam, the local roofers union, local 36, some of our brothers on Skid Row. There's a young activist group called Black Allied Coalition. They came and stood with, Black Leadership Allied Coalition came and stood with us. While we were in front of the LAPD headquarters, there were others who went over to the mayor's mansion. There was also a simultaneous action online. Basically, the city just showing we love and we support Dr. Abdullah. Also, across the street from the city of LA, in Inglewood, which is also in LA County, we are also responding to residents who are hurting, who are concerned. They reached out to us basically sharing that Mayor Butts and the city council over there are neglecting their duty to help residents, as even before COVID, the homeless population in Inglewood was increasing. But since COVID, both the homeless population has been neglected. A lot of renters are now looking at this moratorium on rent ending the moratorium on evictions ending next month, September. Homeowners are screaming out for help, and even business owners. So we've been going over there for a few weeks. And this past week, Inglewood did announce they will be awarding a small amount of rental assistance in the form of $500, but that in addition to another program LA County is now offering that will assist cities like Inglewood, Hawthorne, and others, basically providing a second layer of rental assistance. So we're going to stay on top of that. But also, just speaking with the mass evictions in general, this is something we are very concerned about, as a lot of these rental assistance programs have not met the overall demand throughout the cities and counties. The many people who have been forced out of work, the many people who rent has piled up for about 5 months or so now, who will be expected to pay this once these evictions end. And we know September 1st, they're going to allow the courts to start moving forward with eviction proceedings. And then September 30th, as it stands right now, they're even saying they will start moving forth with evictions. So we most definitely call all people attention to this crisis that is building up. But we also got to recognize and salute organizations like the Tenants Union. We are part of the Baldwin Lemert Crenshaw Tenants Union, but we've also been working with the Lenox Inglewood Tenants Union. So all the champions of people, we most definitely salute them. And just lastly, in Africatown, the area a lot of people are more familiar with as being Lemert Park Village, we are in the middle of a labor dispute, as we have been finding one of the issues as far as people who are in the most need getting assistance and resources. There are a lot of non-governmental organizations that are intercepting these funds and not doing as they need. In this specific case, we are dealing with Community Build. They basically have what's known as the BID contract. It's the Business Improvement District contract for this specific area. We initially were hoping we could get hold of that contract, but because we were not structured properly, we went ahead and took a position to hire people from the community in to handle the cleanup portion of that contract. Our employees have been cleaning from Crenshaw and Vernon to Crenshaw and King. Initially, we were told employees would be paid $18 an hour, and as a lot of people know, that's a decent wage, but it's not a living wage in Los Angeles. So after about 6 weeks, we actually found our employees were only being paid $15 an hour. So that is a $3 decrease from what we initially agreed upon. So we are still in the middle of fighting to get actual workers more respect. You know, it seems like the people who do the most work get the least out of what's there to take care of people, while those in administration and managing different contracts, you know, tend to take more for themselves. So we're hoping the outcome of that will be a situation where folks, you know, will come and be proud to work in Africatown, can actually, you know, do a little better for themselves based off of what they've been compensated. And we are still working to officially rename the area. We're still collecting signatures. And every Sunday during the weekly Drum Circle Marketplace, we still have a mutual aid program going. Most weeks we're feeding the people. Some weeks we focus on clothing people. Some weeks is about different supplies and resources that are needed, again, especially in this COVID situation we're in right now. So again, I want to thank you, Tej, for allowing me to come on once again. And as I began, I just want to re-acknowledge all of our brothers and sisters on lockdown and let them know we are out here fighting with and for you.
Thank you so much, Brother Billions.
Thank you, Ted.
And up next is our weekly Skid Row updates with community activist and organizer, Brother General Jeff.
Hey, this is General Jeff with the Freedom Now update coming out straight out of Skid Row. Thank y'all for having me. It's great to be here once again. You know, I kind of feel awkward coming in with so much energy, but I just don't want to come in with doom and gloom, even though it's like some serious content that we really need to talk about and been talking about as it relates to homelessness, COVID-19, and federal investigations and federal court cases and corruption in City Hall. And, you know, we don't want to come in sounding down. So we try to come in as upbeat as possible because that way the listeners can better receive the energy. But just know it's trying times right now in Skid Row. It's very, very difficult. Good news. Let's see. Let's start with something good. People are coming back to Skid Row to pass out food and hygiene supplies to homeless folks and clothes. You know, so that's a good thing. You know, the COVID had a lot of folks concerned and folks stopped coming to Skid Row. I'm seeing there's an uptick. You know, folks are coming back, you know, kind and concerned citizens, caring for the fellow man, you know, fellow humans. You know, we really appreciate it. It's okay. Come on back. Wear a mask, social distance, you know, whatever it is that takes, gloves, hand sanitizers, whatever makes you comfortable. We've seen it all. And so that is positive. We've got, you know, I just want to step away from Skid Row for a moment because as a frontline soldier on the front lines in the streets of Skid Row and homelessness, I'm also born and raised in South Central Los Angeles in the Crenshaw District. And, you know, we have allies, you know, that's home base for me, if you will, where I was born and raised. And so we have ally organizations there, which is Ceasefire, others. And so today, for one of our lost loved ones, sister by the name of Vicky Lindsay, and I just want to take this time to, you know, to acknowledge her efforts with Project Cry No More, the assistance mothers that would lose their children to gang violence and gun violence. And you know, a lot of people look at Dr. Maleen Abdul and Black Lives Matter and how they fight and represent and support mothers of those children slain at the hands of law enforcement. Well, it was like, you know, before, you know, Black Lives Matter was born in 2013. So before then, it was Vicky Lindsay going all the way back as, you know, early as 2005. And, you know, she's been absolutely amazing, a pillar in the community, leading by example, supporting, you know, our Black, and encouraging our Black brothers, including myself. She was out there on the front lines when I got there. And so, you know, as much as I honor and admire Dr. Maleen Abdullah, you know, it's the exact same energy for and love and respect for Sister Vicky Lindsay. And so 2 days ago was her funeral. You know, a lot of prominent folks in the building, and we practice social distancing. And so that's my second funeral this year. We actually attended and practiced social distancing. So it's awkward for folks to, you know, show love for someone and then still be, you know, far away into today's climate. But, yeah, sister, be dearly missed. And I just want to take a couple of moments to just speak to that. Oh, my goodness, just a tremendous loss. And so Yeah, I'm very, very emotional about that. And so, also too, you know, just we give Skid Row updates. Something else that I'm dealing with, we represent business owners as well in Skid Row. We don't just represent homeless folks. Very awkward situation in Skid Row where a business owner that we've represented many times in Skid Row, they called us again, and we, while we were rejoicing that the city put in some newly installed bike lanes for our community members, and you know, initially it was like, okay, for those riding bikes on 5th Street and 6th Street in the heart of Skid Row from Main Street to Central. And so while there's a reason to rejoice, and then it was actually interesting to see that the acknowledgement, you know, because in Skid Row we create our own uses. And so in addition to bikes using the bike lanes, there are, you know, folks in wheelchairs, and also folks just on foot, because some of these sidewalks, you know, the tents take up the whole sidewalk or just about. And so it's safer for people to walk around the encampments and tents by walking in the street. So now with the addition of bike lanes, there's actually now a safe passageway for folks to walk and get around the encampments, but with also at the same time be safe from traffic. So that is, you know, very, very wonderful upgrade in our community. Now, and on 6th Street, there's one particular business where it's a store and a restaurant. And so they actually, in the morning time, they pull up their truck and unload their wares out of their cardboard boxes in very early morning, pull up right up in front of their store. But now the bike lane's there, and so while doing that, they're being targeted by specific LAP officers that are basically targeting them, saying, hey, you know, you guys can't park here. Well, they were doing that, and it's not like they're, you know, mischievous or devious acts. These are business owners that are just emptying out, you know, the back of their truck to load up in the store and then moving the vehicle. It's just a short trip. And again, you know, it's extremely hard to get any type of consistency from Los Angeles Police Department. And it's just so aggravated. And so I've got to, you know, the business owners asked me to intervene. So we got to figure out, you know, some type of mediation, some type of act. I have no idea what it's going to be yet. So that's another matter. And just, you know, there's so many different issues in our community, but we represent not only just residents, business owners as well. Just wanted to give that update. And I know I mentioned last week that Mayor Garcetti's homeless director resigned, announced her resignment. Christina Miller will be resigning at the end of this month of August, but no replacement has been named yet. And so that's critical to us in Skid Row in terms of, you know, what does the mayor intend to do? Right now, we're hearing rumors that, oh, he's co-chair of the National Democratic Convention, and so he's in support of, you know, one of the presidential candidates. And in a couple of months, in November, when the election happens, if the Democrats win, there's a rumor saying that Garcetti's going to be out of here, going to, you know, looking for a cabinet position, Washington D.C. And so that means homelessness. You know, all these so-called solutions, you know, we're Skid Row, we're homeless, we're just going to be left dead again. And, you know, while he used us to further his political career, while he's termed out in 2022, you know, hey, why wait? He's trying to advance his political career. So, again, as we've been alleging for many, many years, saying that these guys are just, you know, photo opting for their political careers and not really addressing the situation here, and we're seeing that you know, Garcetti's already got one foot out the door. And so while he's replaced, he hasn't replaced this homeless director, he hasn't indicated what it's going to be, who it's going to be, what kind of power, what could they even possibly have if he's on the D.C.? Then possibly Nuri Martinez, who is the current city council president, which would then become the acting mayor. And if history serves me right, she would be the first female Latino mayor in the history of the city of Los Angeles. And so that would be something to celebrate for we the people. And so, you know, there's positives around every corner, but we have to, we're on this wait and see basis while we, you know, we have to, everything, we're behind the eight ball. And so our whole thing is we need real time information. We need to be in front of this thing so we can prepare appropriately. And folks just aren't giving us, our elected officials just aren't giving us access. And it's very, very frustrating. Like with LAPD, you know, they pretty much cut all ties and communication with us. Not that we, you know, talk to the police like that, but there were open channels. So where if something, there was a problem in the community, you know, we had an invitation to speak directly to, you know, LAPD to find out, you know, what was going on or what have you. And so, but ever since the Defund the Police action, LAPD's been all of a sudden MIA. And, you know, they're just acting like spoiled brats. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not scared of the police. And, you know, they're acting like spoiled brats. Like, do your job, bro. You know, you guys got funding over $2 billion, and you crying because, you know, it's not like they slashed a billion. You guys are still getting paid. But then, you know, it's ridiculous. You know, all throughout Los Angeles, the streets of L.A., you know, all throughout the streets of California and the whole nation and around the world, law enforcement, because, you know, defund the police and because of a lot of other successful actions that what we the people, you know, hey, all power to the people, what we the people have been getting positive results from us taking it to the streets and not just settling for, you know, this corrupt system that's going on, and with this upcoming presidential election to continue this corrupt system. Hey, we're out in the streets fighting tooth and nail. Our lives are on the line. Our loved ones are dying, and we're actually getting wins. And so, you know, there's a strong concern. You know, we're putting the word, be on the lookout, because these law enforcement agencies have got different tactics. They're already snatching protesters in unmarked vans, and, you know, they're setting up for a whole lot of desperate acts. And so we're paying attention. We're communicating. And Freedom Now is going to play a significant role in terms of how we spread the information out to a lot of our loved ones who, you know, aren't on the front lines with us. And so coming up over the next few weeks, there are going to be some serious discussions had. So we need everybody to stay tuned to Freedom Now. You know, some big things are developing, and I can't speak on it yet, but stay tuned to Freedom Now. This is General Jeff. This is your Skid Row update. I'll holler soon. All power to the people.
It's that time of the Freedom Now Hour with our co-producer, prolific author, radical historian, professor of African American Studies at the University of Houston, Dr. Gerald Horn, with this week's political analysis.
It was quite striking that the 44th U.S. President Barack Obama shed tears while addressing the Democratic National Convention virtual meeting this week, while his spouse Michelle Obama warned about things getting worse, particularly if the 45th U.S. President is reelected. It was quite remarkable that Mr. Obama dispensed with his usual remarks about hope and change in favor of discussing fear that democracy is at stake if Trump is reelected, that fascism is on the horizon if Trump is reelected. Well, this was all well and good, but he was speaking from Philadelphia at the shrine of the U.S. creation myth, the home of the Immaculate Conception view of the United States of America, speaking of the museum of the so-called American Revolution. And it's quite striking that this site where he chose to speak, this site that represents the citadel of supposed construction of this great so-called democracy in North America, and yet he chose to speak about we are now facing the prospect of fascism. Now, 1776 and the founding of the United States was fought to keep we Africans enslaved, and any sentient being should recognize that slavery carries the seeds of fascism. Thus, our ancestors mostly fought against George Washington and his comrades, and we also know that the vaunted Bill of Rights of the U.S. Constitution that emerged from Washington's victory did not include us. For example, the First Amendment, supposedly guaranteeing religious liberty, did not keep the settlers from suppressing Native American religions and indigenous African religions. And of course, we had no Second Amendment right to bear arms. If we had, slavery would have ended years before 1865. What was remarkable about Mr. Obama's speech is that it reminded us of his often touted 2004 speech at a previous Democratic Party convention, where either naively or opportunistically, he assured one and all that we are all one people, which is demonstrably false. The Constitution, which was the visual backdrop for his remarks this week in Philadelphia, includes a slavery-driven electoral college, which, by the way, refers to black people as being three-fifths human. And this slavery-driven electoral college may mean that the 45th U.S. president could get 6 million votes less than his opponent and still win, just like he got 3 million votes less than his opponent in November 2016 and prevailed. Now, before some of our liberal friends storm KPFK and objection to my remarks, they should just chill out. U.S. presidential elections are not one election, but 50-plus different elections. Hillary Rodham Clinton won California by more than 2 million, almost 3 million votes. And Mr. Biden will likely win California by a similar amount. So just because you prevail in California, where my remarks are directed, that does not necessarily mean you will either win or lose the White House. And of course, we should also recognize that one of the reasons why the Republicans do so poorly in California is precisely because there is no so-called white, unquote, majority in California. Now, listening to Mr. Obama speak in Philadelphia, it reminded me of a scene from that classic movie from the 1950s, On the Waterfront, when Marlon Brando, the actor, in character, cries plaintively, "You were my brother. You should have looked out for me." We should ask Mr. Obama, "You were our brother. You should have looked out for us. You should have warned us that any society that allowed slavery and Jim Crow was ripe for fascism. You should have reminded us of David Duke, a Nazi and a Klansman in 1991, winning 55% of the Euro-American vote in a race for governor in Louisiana. You should have told us that a nation born in counter-revolution against the prospect of abolitionism in the mother country, speaking of Great Britain in the 1770s, was bound to perpetrate or seek to perpetrate counter-revolution versus anti-Jim Crow measures of the 1960s, which is the surest explanation for the results of November 2016. But it's not too late, Mr. Obama. Stop shedding crocodile tears and instead spill your guts, particularly in your upcoming memoir, about what is really happening in the United States of America. In the meantime, you should apologize for the disastrous, catastrophic, invasion of Libya in 2011. And the latest chapter of that debacle was just rendered this past week. Recall that in the wake of the killing of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, tons of weapons leaked out of that North African country, some of which flowed into Mali, which helped to generate a religious-based insurgency that, as we speak, has captured about two-thirds of that country. Just this week, there was a military coup in Mali in response to this insurgency led by religious zealots. And I dare say that one of the reasons why there's so much instability in Mali as we speak is that there is an ongoing French and U.S. intervention in that country that has stirred unrest, as inherently contradictory is the point that both the United States and France are cozy with the backers of these religious zealots, speaking of the religious zealots' Gulf-based allies. What's even more striking about this coup that's taken place in Mali is that the president has been arrested along with his prime minister. The African Union and the Economic Community of West African States have both denounced this coup d'etat. We all know that if these religious zealots come to power, which we cannot rule out, it will spell gloom and doom for women in the first place. Meanwhile, in Libya, chaos reigns. Darker-skinned people have been enslaved. Others are drowning as they seek to escape that country, fleeing across the Mediterranean Sea and losing their lives in the process. All this is part of the sad legacy, I'm afraid to say, of the 44th U.S. president, and a legacy that was either grounded in either naivete or opportunism. Yes, he should be crying a river of tears, but those tears should be devoted to trying to rescue Africans from the disaster he created and redoubling his efforts to ensure that the fascism that he was intimating is coming from North America will not prevail, although all of us should realize that it's rather difficult to deliver the prospect of fascism in Mali and Libya while escaping fascism in North America. This has been Gerald Horn for Freedom Now.
And in closing, we'd like to thank our producers, Sister Femi, Sister Luyanda. Thank you, Dr. Horn, Brother General Jeff, Brother Billion, Brother G2, and all those who made today's program possible, our board op Ricky. This program can be reheard for the next 60 days. You can go to kpfk.org, audio archive, scroll to Freedom Now. This has been Sister Thage. Please stay tuned for our Sister Sumta coming up next with Spotlight Africa. And until next week, as always, we stand ready for revolution.
Voting is the most effective way to make your voice heard on the issues that matter most to you. Don't like the direction the country is headed in? Vote. Don't feel like politicians are listening to you? They will if you vote. Latinos are a huge and growing voting bloc. And if we all come out to the polls to flex our power, there's nothing to stop us from having a reflective, inclusive, and accountable government. It all starts with registering, then exercising your right to vote. Election Day is Tuesday, November 3rd. More information at www.votolatino.org. KPFK is a proud community sponsor of Voto Latino.
Innovating dialogue, informative public affairs, news and information, innovative music, non-commercial, listener-supported, culturally diverse radio. We are KPFK 90.7.